Well, I'm going to attempt to stand tonight so you can be sure we won't be here long. Several have encouraged me to start standing back up. Judges chapter 11, and we'll read the first 11 verses. We have been studying the book of Judges for quite some time now. It is rather a depressing book. The reason is simply this. The ingratitude of humanity is on full display. God is faithful. God continues to rain blessings down upon His people. He continues to forgive and restore. And yet we continue to read, and the people of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord. Let me tell you a second reason why it's depressing. I see that in my own life. I see that in my church life. I see that in all of us these days. The faithfulness of God and the fickleness of human flesh. This stretches from the death of Joshua to the ordaining of King Saul as the first king of Israel. The spiritual climate is as low as it is anywhere and any time among the people of God. Two bright thoughts. God never forsakes His people. And here and there, in this time frame, there are some men and women who rise to the level of leaders. And therefore, judgment is withheld. Jephthah is one such individual. His life is a little interesting as we'll move through both tonight and next week some things about him, chapter 11, verse 1. Now, Jephthah the Gileadite was a mighty warrior, but he was the son of a prostitute. Gilead was the father of Jephthah. Gilead's wife also bore him sons. And when his wife's sons grew up, they drove Jephthah out and said to him, "You shall not have an inheritance in our father's house, for you are the son of another woman." Then Jephthah fled from his brothers and lived in the land of Tob. And worthless fellows collected around Jephthah and went out with him. After a time, the Ammonites made war against Israel. And when the Ammonites made war against Israel, the elders of Gilead went to bring Jephthah from the land of Tob. And they said to Jephthah, "Come and be our leader that we might fight against the Ammonites." But Jephthah said to the elders of Gilead, "Did you not hate me and drive me out of my father's house? Why have you come to me now when you are in distress?" The elders of Gilead said to Jephthah, "That is why we have turned to you now, that you may go with us and fight against the Ammonites and be our head over all the inhabitants of Gilead." Jephthah said to the elders of Gilead, "If you bring me home again to fight against the Ammonites, and the Lord gives them over to me, I will be your head." The elders of Gilead said to Jephthah, "The Lord will be witness between us if we do not do as you say." So Jephthah went with the elders of Gilead. The people made him head and leader over them. And Jephthah spoke all his words before the Lord at Mizpah. Father, my prayer is that this passage will take on meaning for all of us tonight, and that we might be able to apply it to our lives, that we might rise above mediocrity and walk in obedience, trusting you and being faithful to you. In Jesus' name I pray, amen. On your little handout, I gave you three words tonight, and we'll kind of launch our thoughts between those three words. The first word is rejection, and you'll find that in the first three verses. Two things are quickly discovered about Jephthah. Number one, he is a mighty warrior. Some translations say a mighty man of valor, brave, strong, a great man, an encourager, and one with great courage. Jephthah, somebody you ought to know, somebody I would want to know. The second thing that we quickly find out about him is that he is the son of a harlot. So that's his challenge, his character. He's a mighty man of valor, but his challenge is he's the son of a harlot. Now, quite obviously, that was not his fault. It was his father's fault. His father had visited a prostitute, and she had borne Jephthah, and his father had a wife who had borne number of other sons. So it certainly was not Jephthah's fault, but it became Jephthah's challenge. I was an old man before I ever heard about dysfunctional families. That's a key word that's come along in the last 10 years or so when we talk about people whose families have broken apart, where it's a single mom raising children, a single dad raising children, where one or the other is not as it ought to be, where the home's not the perfect picture of 2.5 children and a mother and a father and all the things that we used to think that the home was supposed to be. And we've termed it dysfunctional. But if you'll take your Bibles and look back to the Old Testament, you'll find that while that term may be a rather new term for some of us, that condition is not a new condition at all. Here lived a man who had been unfaithful to his wife, with a wife who bore a number of children for him, and with another son who had been born from visiting a prostitute. So that's his challenge. Now here's the conflict. In verse 3, we discover that the children of his mother, his half-brothers, despised the fact that he was still in the home and therefore would be a part of the inheritance. If indeed he was the older of the sons, he would have received 2/3 of the inheritance, while the other sons would have divided 1/3 of the inheritance. That was Jewish custom. The older receives 2/3, the younger 1/3. That was part of the issue, I am sure. The other part of the issue is that he was a stepbrother to all of these sons, and their desire was to have the whole of the inheritance and push Jephthah out. It was a generational thing. Their attitude and their actions proved to be an attitude and action of hatred toward him. And so they simply said, "You shall not have an inheritance in our father's house because you're the son of another woman." Verse 3, Jephthah flees the scene. He comes to a place called Tob, which is in Syria near today's Damascus. So he really removes himself from what we know of, the promised land, and gets out of their hair and gets out of their inheritance and gets out of their sight. And then an interesting thing happens. Worthless fellows. Now that doesn't really translate as it ought to. Men without jobs. Men who did not have homes. Homeless men. Jobless men. Men whose lives were seemingly lost rallied around this fellow Jephthah, and they began to pursue him. That's not going to be the last time in scriptures when this takes place. Let me just remind you that when King David is being pursued by Saul, a band of men wrap themselves around David and they hide out in caves, and they are warlike men who help to keep him alive and surviving until God puts him on the throne. So you'll discover that this is not a bad thing at all, except when you read these first three verses. This mighty man of valor has suddenly been challenged because he's a son of a harlot, and the conflict is such that he can't remain in the home where his mother is and where his stepbrothers are, and he's been driven out to the land of Tob, completely out of the promised land, and then surrounded by worthless fellows who go with him wherever he goes. Now, stop there for a moment and let me tell you what you will discover later on if you continue to read the book of Judges. During this time, Jephthah makes a real positive out of a negative. From the distance that he is away from his half-brothers and from Gilead, this band of soldiers that have gathered around him form a raiding party. And they fight against the Ammonites and protect the homeland and the brothers. Unbeknownst to them, Jephthah is taking care of his mother and his half-brothers and his country, the promised land. God uses the unusable. And I entitled this tonight, Man's Trash Becomes God's Treasure. Because all of a sudden, he who is not wanted under any set of circumstances becomes a wanted man. He who was told to leave is now begged to lead. He who was a reject is now going to be reigning over them. You want to pause for a moment and think, is that not often how we treat the Lord? Don't need you, don't want you, your word, your will, your ways, not interested. And then all of a sudden tragedy, a crisis, a difficulty, a need arises. And we move to him begging and pleading that he who was asked to leave is now asked to lead. I thought that quite interesting. Early on in my ministry, I had a message that I used to preach in revivals called Fire Plug Religion. Doesn't it sound exciting? The idea was this. Nobody wants a fire hydrant in their front yard. If somebody has one, bet you planted a bush around it. I bet you tried to cover it up and hide it. It's unsightly until your house catches on fire, and then you are thrilled to have a fire plug in your front yard. I illustrated that with a portion of that message and called it spare tire religion. A spare tire's in the trunk, or at least they used to be. It's unwanted, it's unnecessary, we don't check it, we don't care about it. If it's low or high or fine with air, it's not a concern until you have a flat. And then the spare tire becomes the most important tire that you ever could think about. And somehow, that's how our relationship and our fellowship with the Lord is. There are times when, just as Jephthah's brother said, unwanted, unneeded, and he left. And there are other times when we need him so that we cry out. And aren't you glad he's faithful even when we are not? Mike mentioned that we did Bill Taylor's service this afternoon. Bill had something written in his Bible that I have written in mine. He may have gotten it from me. I may have gotten it from him. It's been so long ago, I don't remember. But here's what I scratched in the front of my Bible years ago. I am nothing, for I have proven that to him. He is everything, and he has proven that to me. I think that would have been true in this set of circumstances. So let's proceed to verses 4 and beyond. Here's the request. The Ammonites make war against Israel. And when they make war against Israel, here come all the elders of Gilead to Jephthah, and they cry out, come be our leader, that we Now, that's an interesting word. That we will join together with you. We want you with us, that we may fight against the Ammonites. So the cause of the request is that they now have a crisis. The Ammonites are about to invade Israel and defeat the elders of Gilead, and they have come now to ask for help from Jephthah. Here's the character of the request. The elders must have heard what we find out later on in the book of Judges, that this band of soldiers that had been attracted to Jephthah, this warlike band of marauders, was moving through the land and protecting Israel as best they could. So he invites Jephthah and all of these worthless, as it calls the men, to come back to the depth of the country and fight against the Ammonites. Be our protector. In verses 7 and 8, Jephthah does just exactly what I think he ought to have done. He says to their request, "Wait just a minute. Aren't you the same folks that did not want me to inherit from my father? And aren't you the same folks that drove me out of my home? And aren't you the same folks that did not want me even in the land around you?" You'll see that they did not really answer. What they said was, "That was before the Ammonites. That was before we needed you. That was before we wanted you to come and be our ruler. That was before we recognized our inabilities and our mistakes." So he went from leaving to leading. He recounts the past, and then he responds with this promise. "If I go back with you and the Lord gives us victory, I'll be your leader." He was simply saying, if God's in this, I will do it. If God is not in this, it will not be done. And I think this implication is easily understood. Hey, fellas, I'm not doing this for you. And as we'll come to next week, he's really saying, I'm doing it because it's the right thing to do. I'm doing it because I'm trying to break the cycle of generational dysfunction. I'm doing it because you blamed me for what my father did, but I don't have to be a victim. I can be a victor. I do not have to let what happened before taint what's happening after. My name's Jephthah, and I am a brave and bold and courageous soldier, and I can get past my past if you can. I can be used of God even though you thought I was useless, even though you thought I was worthless, even though you treated me as trash. To God, I am treasure. You sent me away. I was exiled from Israel, but I was not exiled from God, because God lives in Tob just like he lives in Canaan. I'll go back with you, but it is based upon this singular thing. If God gives us the victory, I'll lead. If God does not, you're on your own. I think that's a great sermon. I think that's a great message. I think it's exactly what he ought to have said, and I think that's exactly what they ought to have heard, and it's going to work out for God's glory. So look at that third word, the word response. In verse 9, he promises to return home with them. The elders of Gilead say, "The Lord is our witness. If we don't do what you say," he goes with the elders of Gilead. The people make him head, leader, or ruler over them. I want you to catch this last sentence. Jephthah spoke all of his words before the Lord at Mizpah. I would not expect you to remember much about Mizpah. I had to do a little bit of looking back to make sure. But in Genesis 31, when Jacob and Laban meet, they've been angry with one another for years. And finally, Jacob and Laban meet together and make peace. It was at Mizpah. It is now that Jephthah comes back to Mizpah, where peace was made years and years before between Jacob and Laban, and the cycle of sin is broken. And in spite of the past, he said there can be a present, and God can receive the honor and the glory. He spoke all of these words before the Lord at Mizpah. The implication here is he never lost his fellowship with God, though he might have lost his fellowship with his brothers. And when the crisis came, remaining in fellowship with God means that what was man's trash remained God's treasure. And God decided to use this man as one of those several that we have studied over the past few months as a deliverer to bring Israel out of a loss and into a victory. And just a couple of closing remarks that would bring it into modern time. There are so many of us that might very well need to break the cycle. You think of someone and you grow angry. You have resentment. Oh, they might not be here tonight. It might be your brother. It might be your sister. It might be a parent. But Pastor, if you knew how they had treated me, you'd know why I no longer want to have anything to do with them. You know why there is a separation. You know why there is a dysfunction in our relationship. Here's a lesson taught tonight that somebody in this room might need. As long as you maintain fellowship with God, there is the high potential God can bring relationships back together and make them better than they ever were before. We can get past our past. We are not worthless. We are not someone's trash. We are God's treasure. And all we need to do is remain faithful to God, even if we feel driven away or driven out. The day may come when God simply speaks to you and says, I am about to put you in the place you never expected to be, because I'm a God who rewards the faithfulness of his people. And at Mizpah, peace can be found. The cycle can be broken. Sin can be defeated. Victory can be won. Maybe that's what you need to do with somebody somewhere in your past. Would you stand, please? We'll just have a couple of verses played tonight. Mike and I'll be here in the altar. God speaks to your heart. If you want to just come and find a kneeling place to pray, if there's anything that you need to do at all because of what God has said to you tonight, right now is the time for you to do it.